I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. This week, there were a lot of council meetings that I want to update you on, including the Kitchener Council Committee meeting, which approved the downtown Kitchener cycling grid, Waterloo Council's meeting that ended up running over 2 days, and Wilmot Council's meeting where they discussed the Integrity Commissioner's recent report in response to Mayor Armstrong's Facebook posting earlier this year. It's also still budget time for many local councils, so I have a few updates on what's happening regarding property taxes as well. We'll start in Wilmot today, as they discussed the Commissioner's report regarding Wilmot Mayor Les Armstrong's Facebook post that suggested the Black Lives Matter movement was a hoax. After a previous discussion about this issue at Wilmot Council, there were 5 complaints to the Integrity Commission about the Mayor's actions. The Integrity Commissioner's report was released last week, and Council needed to decide whether to accept the report's recommendations, which called for a truthful, honest, and sincere apology from the Mayor. Before deciding how to proceed, Council heard from several delegations. First to speak was Nigel Gordick. He summarized the situation up to this point.
On Friday, June 26, I was here delegating at the special council meeting a few days after Mayor Armstrong shared an offensive video that contained racist conspiracy theories and falsehoods that had been debunked. In the intervening days between the mayor's actions and my presentation, he stood firm and unapologetic in the belief that he had done nothing wrong. Finally, after pressure from his regional and township colleagues, he read a prepared statement which, to me, lacked authenticity because it failed to demonstrate that he understood why his actions had caused harm.
Mr. Gordick also shared about a potential way forward on this issue that involved the mayor reaching out to some of the delegations at previous council meetings who had shared how the mayor's action caused harm to the community.
A councillor had suggested that the mayor reach out to at least some of the people who had spoken at the special council meeting the previous day and have one-on-one conversations with them. That would enable the mayor to offer personal and meaningful apologies that addressed each person's issues. The regional councillor told me that Mayor Armstrong had agreed to the proposal, so the councillor asked if I would be willing to have that conversation, and I said that I would. And so I waited. And then I waited. I'm still waiting. It's been 164 days, and I think it's safe to assume that he's lost interest in speaking with me. However, I am still available.
He concludes with a quotation from Bernice King and asks what action will the mayor take to prove he's serious about change.
Bernice King, the daughter of Martin Luther King Jr., said this, "Kindness matters, but kindness does not equal justice. Civility counts, but calling for civility is not the humane response to injustice. Justice is. Love is essential, but love is not a passive weeping bystander. Love puts in work. It's up to you now. What work will you do to help us move forward?"
If you're on Twitter and want to stay up to date on what's happening at Wilmot Council, you may want to give Mr. Gordick a follow at Love Wilmot. The next delegation, John Bailey, was not surprised by the recommendation, which he called a slap on the wrist, as it showed the system working exactly as it was intended.
"What is also painfully clear is that the findings of the Integrity Commissioner, after a lengthy and thorough examination, led to a recommendation of a punitive action of nothing more than requiring an apology. While many of us are aghast at the dismissive nature of this report, it's clear that the system, a white male Integrity Commissioner investigating a white male mayor, recommending a wrist slap, is working exactly as intended, a system set up by white men which seems to serve white men."
David Atkinson spoke next and was disappointed to see the reputation of Wilmot damaged, with so little of the recent media coverage showcasing, in his words, the real Wilmot, where people respect each other and live in good neighborly fashion. He's not sure how requiring yet another apology will change anything other than to humiliate the mayor, who David believes has been bullied.
"It is my intent to support the mayor, who I believe has been unfairly browbeaten and bullied by council and others in the community on this issue. 2 apologies and a commitment to continue to learn more about these issues should put this to rest."
After the delegation spoke, Chair Barry Fisher from Ward 3 asked if Mayor Armstrong had any response. He replied,
My comments are that I accept the Integrity Commission's report, and that I stand by my comments that I made on in my statement on Friday. And that's all I have to say.
As Council discussed how to respond to the Integrity Commissioner's recommendation, it was decided that an apology that Mayor Armstrong had posted online the previous week, if read into the public record at the meeting, would meet the Commissioner's recommendation of a public apology. Mayor Armstrong proceeded to read that apology. Ward 4 Councillor Jeff Gerber recommended that the best way forward at this point was with specific, concrete actions to be taken by Council, and he recommended establishing an advisory committee consisting of Indigenous, Black, and people of color from Wilmot who would receive an honorarium for their work.
And I would suggest that more than any further financial penalties that we could impose on the member, something concrete we can do as a further step towards showing the township's commitment to racial equality and working to ending systemic racism is to find a way to bring the voices of the Black, Indigenous, and people of color community to the table permanently, not do something temporary like sanctioning the mayor further tonight. I would suggest a BIPOC Community Relations Committee, a standing committee of council consisting of council and staff reps, but more importantly, representation from the Wilmot BIPOC community.
After some discussion and comments from all councillors, the motion put forth stated that the mayor must provide a public apology, which he did earlier in this meeting, continue to provide quarterly updates on racism education, that staff will develop terms of reference for an advisory group that will bring the voices of Black, Indigenous, and people of color to the table, and that all councillors participate in equity and anti-racism training in 2021. And that motion carried. Let's move to Kitchener now, where last week the Community and Infrastructure Services Committee met to discuss the proposed downtown cycling grid. There were 18 delegations registered to speak on this issue. This proposal would see an additional 3 kilometers of separated cycling infrastructure, as well as other cycling initiatives, such as more bike parking and neighborhood bikeways, at a cost of $5.9 million in capital costs and annual maintenance and operating costs of around $240,000. Construction could start as early as next year and would be spread out over 3 years, with completion scheduled by 2023. Delegations in favor of the project highlighted benefits such as improved safety and access to the core for those who cycle and walk, that people of all ages and abilities will feel more comfortable cycling in the downtown, allowing more people to cycle instead of drive, and the economic benefits to downtown businesses. One delegation, Sam Labin, shared a presentation which says, "Safe streets make adventures possible," and he then outlined several adventures their family have been on by bike.
I wanted to express my support for the downtown protected cycling route. I was categorically delighted when I heard about the news. My wife and I, we have 2 children. We drive, but we also walk and take the bus and use the LRT, and we ride our bikes. And we support the downtown protected cycling grid because, for us, safe streets make adventures possible.
He shares an image which highlights places they can currently bike to easily, but also all of the places they'd love to bike to but currently don't feel safe in doing so. Sam wants to make getting places by bike as safe as it is by car.
Now, I get that some people are concerned about having to find new routes to drive around downtown. We live on Madison Avenue, and we'll have to adjust the routes we normally drive to, but we'll happily do that in exchange for reduced speed limits and safe bike lanes. I'm trying to make it as normal for our kids to ride their bikes somewhere as it is to drive.
The next delegate is Brian Doucette, and he shares his experiences riding everywhere in the Netherlands without thinking anything of it. It was only upon moving here that he became a, quote, cyclist. He wants cycling infrastructure to become boring, ordinary, and common, which comes with increased safety.
Some of you who know me know that I lived in the Netherlands for many years, and when I lived there, I rode a bike everywhere, and to be honest, never really thought about it. It was only really moving back to Canada in 2017 that I became a cyclist. Here in Canada, you know, we talk a lot about drivers versus cyclists. It's very combative, right? You're a driver or you're a cyclist. Good quality cycling infrastructure, good quality road infrastructure blurs that division. With good quality infrastructure like what's being proposed here, we have people using bikes to get around their city safely and enjoyably. enabling more journeys to be done by more people in different ways. When cycling becomes safe, convenient, enjoyable, it becomes ordinary. It becomes boring, in a sense. It also becomes safer. Good quality infrastructure designs conflict out of the road system.
Kathy Storing lives right beside Joseph Street, which is proposed to become one way. She says that any type of cycling infrastructure is a positive for the city. However, she'd like to see the Joseph Street section of the project delayed a bit so the city can answer some questions.
I get the passion for cycling and I applaud the city for all of the initiatives they've done over the years. But I do have questions, and I have to say, after listening to all these various delegations today, I feel like I'm questioning the value of cute puppies. However, the questions that I've had since we were first introduced to this initiative are echoed by some of my neighbors. The biggest thing that for us was that we live downtown. We see very few cyclists on our downtown streets. In winter, they're rare. So our first thoughts were around, why is this happening? So here are some of the things that we talked about. Number one is the price. $5.9 million just for cycling is very, very rich at a time when governments of all levels are trying to deal with unprecedented costs. So is this separated cycling lanes, is that really the key need for the future of downtown Kitchener? I would like to see this not killed. I think any kind of cycling initiatives are wonderful, but I would like this particular thing delayed a little bit to answer some very, very specific questions. I would like to see evidence that the number of daily cyclists will justify the permanent nature of the infrastructure.
Mike Morris is supportive for many of the same reasons mentioned by other supporters: safer mobility for all road users, good economics for the downtown, and environmental sustainability. He explains how downtown businesses will benefit from more cyclists and pedestrians in the core.
This is just good economics for our downtown. There was a wonderful study cited in the report that I wanted to call your attention to. Uptown Waterloo shoppers are finding, their study found, 70% of shoppers travel by bike, walking, or public transit. And that the quote from the report is, the cyclists make more frequent shopping trips than those arriving by car and spend at least as much overall as those who drive to shop. They go on to note that cyclists often have more disposable income as a result of not having car payments, insurance, gas, and all the rest.
After the delegations are finished, council discusses the plan further. Ward 4 Councillor Christine Michaud and Ward 8 Councillor Mark Johnston both have concerns about this plan increasing congestion in and around the Kitchener Market on Saturdays. Staff respond that the proposed one-way along Cedar will likely improve traffic flow along there and reduce congestion around the parking lot on market days, perhaps removing the need for a traffic control officer in that space. Staff continue.
And we know that only a small portion of our market's shoppers actually utilize that parking garage. So like throughout the day, that's only a portion of our customers. And when the LRT was up and running before the pandemic hit, there's actually a big shift in the way that people access the market. And a lot of people walk from downtown or bike, the ones that are comfortable that try to get there. But we know there's latent demand for people who would like to bike there more. And so we think that this change will actually help improve the flow of traffic in and out of the market.
Staff also mentioned the continued population growth in the downtown core and note that having these kinds of active transportation options when people first move to an area is really important, since most people develop their transportation routines soon after moving to a new location. Some councillors felt the project costs were high and wondered if there were ways to break the project up a bit and spread it out over a longer period. In addition to resulting higher construction costs, staff also emphasize the importance of building this out as a grid.
This grid is a result of extensive work by a community working group, the Cycling and Trails Master Plan, with staff and with stakeholders. I think if you start pulling pieces from this grid, then ultimately you don't provide a grid at all. And so then you get more of a fragmented approach and you don't create that environment that the grid is intended to create in terms of safe cycling in and around the downtown.
We heard some delegates talk about the lack of the presence of cyclists that are being observed in Kitchener. And so the communities that have built the network in their downtown as more of a complete process have actually seen the biggest returns on that in terms of the perception of success of the grid. And so the piecemeal approach results in piecemeal cyclists being, you know, or people changing over to their mode.
Ward 10 Councillor Sarah Marsh outlines how this plan could be transformational for the downtown and the city as a whole. She references what's happened in other Canadian cities and says we need to follow their lead.
The downtown cycling grid that we're seeing before us today is really the result of not just the consultations that staff did, but also years and years of hearing from residents that they would cycle more frequently for commuting and for leisure if they felt safe to do so. We know that protected lanes and connectivity into our downtown core really do have the potential to be transformational in turning our city into a cycling-friendly community. We see from other cities where they made bold investments in cycling structure that it succeeded in increasing ridership because it feels safer for people, both young and old and in between, to choose to take their bikes. Today, we have really seen a wide range of people. We've heard from developers, we've heard from parents, we've heard from senior citizens who are retired, we've heard from everyone in between, and we have heard from a few cycling advocates. But my goodness, this is not a niche issue. This is a citywide issue, and the research has been done in other cities. We're not leading the way in this regard. We're following, and it's time that we act.
There are several cities that serve as an example that we could follow, such as Montreal, Edmonton, and Calgary. Much like Kitchener, these cities were adding cycling infrastructure slowly and in fragments. It was not until those cities built out a connected grid that they really saw drastic increases in cycling. Within 3 months of Calgary implementing its cycling grid, bike counts on that corridor rose by 95%. They are now at 132%, with one bike counter on 12th Avenue seeing a 400% increase since being installed. Staff are also seeing greater uptake in cycling. As noted in the Waterloo Region Record, the pandemic has shown that more people are cycling here and globally. Trail counters on area trails show that the number of cyclists has doubled since last year. The main motion is broken out into two parts since Ward 6 Councillor Paul Singh has a conflict of interest for a section along Cedar Street. The first part of the motion along Cedar Street passes with all in favour except for Ward 3 Councillor John Gazzola, who opposed it, and Councillor Singh, who abstained. The rest of the main motion was presented and everyone voted in favour except for Councillor Gazzola, who opposed it. Ward 9 Councillor Debbie Chapman supported it, but, quote, with reservations. That passes at committee, but will need final approval at the December 14th Council meeting. Let's move to Waterloo Council's recent meeting that actually lasted 2 days, technically, starting Monday and ending well after midnight. Many items were discussed, including whether to install sidewalks on Longfellow Drive, concerns with the city leaf collection program, and inclusionary zoning. I want to focus, though, on two motions passed that focus on anti-racism and equity. First, Council considered the creation of a new four-person staff team that would focus on Indigenous initiatives, anti-racism, accessibility, and equity. Several delegations spoke to this issue. Sean Johnston, a co-founder of Landback Camp, spoke to his experience in Waterloo Region and the lack of representation carved out for Indigenous people.
My original plan was to actually move back to London after graduating from Wilfrid Laurier. I stayed here in Kitchener-Waterloo because I saw these communities here constantly coming together to support one another, and that is something that I wanted to be a part of. The people supporting one another, the groups here, the arts community. During this time, though, in the last 7 years living here in Kitchener-Waterloo, I observed that there was very little space for Indigenous communities to gather. There was also no representation of us at the municipal level. Tair, Amy, and myself, we created Landback Camp, the three of us, queer folks, Indigenous queer folks, Two-Spirit folks, the youth. We created that space because we became tired of watching our community struggle. We became tired of the red tape, the fees, the lack of proper representation. our message from the camp is clear. We want space in public facilities. We want space in the parks. We want space at the tables. We want you to listen to us.
Amy Smoke, co-founder of Land Back Camp, also spoke. Unfortunately, her connection was a little choppy, but she highlighted how, quote, the very basis of our well-being is the land. She also noted, we are tired collectively across Turtle Island after having to say the same thing again and again. One delegation, Hannah Marie Enns, has a unique presentation as she asked council to engage in a spelling test of sorts. She asked each counselor to write down various words including Waterloo, Anishinaabe, and Haudenosaunee. She asked what words were easy and which were hard, and asked council to reflect on why that is.
What words have you put a mental hierarchy of importance on? The words you might have had more trouble spelling are the people's names on whose land we are now discussing this recommendation. We should all know how to spell these names, and the reason we don't is tied to the ongoing impacts of settler colonialism. What happens when you only have representation of your lived experiences, presumably white, settler, middle to upper class, university educated, able-bodied, making decision for other groups of people in city positions?
The next delegation is Ruth Cameron from AQUA, the AIDS Committee of Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo, and area. She says that many have made reference to unconscious bias and says that's not what has gotten us to this level of inequality. It was intentional decisions.
I've heard a few individuals speak this evening using terminology such as unconscious bias. Unconscious bias has not gotten us to this level of inequality in what is now called Canada. It is not unconscious bias. It is actually very intentional decisions about the allocation of power and disempowering of First Peoples through enclosure of their land, originally by the British Crown, funded through dollars that were generated through the transatlantic slave trade in what is now termed the British Caribbean. So there was a reference tonight made to people of color, kind of connecting people of color as newcomers in Canada. And I want to say that Black people have been in Canada since before Canada was invented because of the transatlantic slave trade. So when we're looking at the inequalities, we have to talk about intentional decisions made through the creation of this country and through immigration policy that have very intentionally created inequalities and stratification between various ethnic and racial groups.
Ward 7 Councillor Tennille Bonagore shared her closing thoughts on this motion and discussion.
As a Caucasian Australian who became a Canadian, I am a creature of white colonial history. I fully support this motion and will enthusiastically support it, both for the city and for myself. I mean, I see this as a step towards positive change. And by supporting this here and now, I hope in a small way to help begin addressing the historical wrongs inflicted all around the world, including the wrongs against the First Peoples of Australia, who weren't even considered human enough to warrant treaties. We can't just look around and point out what is wrong outside City Hall. We need to dig deep, and we need to address what's wrong inside it as well. And we need to be honest with ourselves and with each other. I mean, I really appreciate that this plan is not presented as a fait accompli, that it's flexible, and that it will be shaped by the people hired to give us their insights. That's one of the things I love most about it.
Ward 2, Roy Spotterly, says that he enthusiastically supports this motion and takes a moment to thank all those who helped make this happen.
Really also want to say thank you to members of the Land Back Camp, to members from Black Lives Matter, the ACB Network, and the countless other organizations within our community who have been asking for this type of work to happen, for all of their hard work and their physical and emotional labor on this topic. And I think this is a strong first step for us as a city to move in the appropriate direction.
That motion passes unanimously. Later, much later actually, in that meeting, Ward 5 Councillor Jen Vasek presented a motion that considers the role the city can play in reallocating funds to upstream services. I had a chance to discuss this motion with Councillor Vasek earlier this week. This is what she had to say about it.
There's been a lot of attention to the reallocation of police funds and reinvestment into community-led health and public safety initiatives. And that's a big piece of the motion, and it's what drove the motion and creating the motion in the first place. That's one piece of the motion, is to say, hey, region, police, province, MPPs, please, City of Waterloo supports reallocation of police funds towards upstreaming efforts. We don't get any of the police budget. We can't determine how it's allocated or reallocated and reinvested, but we can determine how things are reallocated at the City of Waterloo.
At this point, it's around midnight, and there are still two delegates to speak. Jody Koburinski and Funke Oba both speak in support of this motion. Ward 1 Councillor Sandra Hanmer supports the motion and summarizes why she believes this is a good direction for Waterloo.
I too am happy to vote in favor of this motion. It certainly is a call on upper tiers of government to really take a look at what they're doing and how resources are being allocated. It equally is a call to action for us as a city to do what we can do internally to ensure that we are really being true to our pillars of anti-racism, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
There was little discussion on this particular motion, actually, as all councillors were in support of it. So it passed unanimously, and a staff report on what Waterloo can do specifically in this regard will come back to council by March 2021. That basically concluded the council meeting that had started over 12 hours earlier. And I have just a few quick notes on other happenings around the region recently. I mentioned in last week's episode that some local councils supported the Grand River Conservation Authority's call for the provincial government to end Schedule 6, which greatly changes and limits the role of Ontario conservation authorities. By my count, at least six local councils passed such motions, including Wilmot, Woolwich, Waterloo, Kitchener, Cambridge, and the region of Waterloo. However, the province recently announced that Schedule 6 would remain a part of Bill 229, and that bill was passed on December 8th. And lastly, it is budget season for many local councils. There have been a variety of approaches by various councils to the 2021 budget plans. Cambridge landed on a 1.27% increase and froze water rates for 2021 to achieve that rate. Waterloo decided to go ahead with their planned tax increase of 3.5%. Some savings were created, though, through the freezing of water and sanitary rates at 2020 levels, and the tax increase overall will have an impact of $60 for the average household. Kitchener is proposing a 1.1% property tax increase, and when you include stormwater and gas taxes too, which Kitchener did not freeze, the impact is about $34 for the average household. Kitchener makes its final budget decisions in January, so stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to today's show. I'm Melissa Bowman for the CKMS Newsroom. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom.